You are listening to the Football Sack Podcast. It is the Friday show coming to you live at the time of recording from Southern Cross University's recording studios here on the far north coast of New South Wales. Of course, whatever time you're listening to will be whatever time you're listening to, so it won't be live, but we are live. Joining me today in the studio in place of the former co-host of the show, Christian Leyland, is a new face and hopefully a familiar face for the show. Welcome aboard, Steve Hapgood.
Thanks very much for having me, Jack.
We have a lot to get through on today's show, as we always do on this show. We don't muck around. We're going to talk about the week's A-League action that has just gone by. We'll have a brief look ahead to the week's A-League action to come. And then we'll also talk about this new APFI, Asia Pacific Football Institute, that we alluded to on last week's show. So let's strap yourselves in if you are wearing... If you're in your car and you're listening to your podcast, strap yourselves in because it's illegal to not be strapped in. Righto, let's start with a brief recap of last week's stuff, Steve. Friday night, it was derby round last week, of course. Last Friday night kicked us off with Brisbane continuing their streak. Will they ever lose is the question. And we sort of said, who cares as long as they keep doing their thing?
Absolutely. Look, they've been the most refreshing thing that I've seen in Australian football for many, many years. Whether they go on and break this, you know, formidable record that they're chasing or whether they don't, as long as they keep playing football the way they play football, I'll always be a fan. I'll always watch them. And I must admit, I don't have favourite sides in the A-League at all, but I will always sit down and watch Brisbane Roar play.
Yeah. We said just before, Eric Partolu in that central midfield role, something like 110 passes at 97% completion rate, three shots, one of which was his goal, the other which crashed off the crossbar. They are Xavi, Iniesta-esque statistics, aren't they?
They are. They're world-class statistics, you know, and I think that you would be able to put those set of stats against anybody in the game at the moment, and they would stand up as being equally as good, if not better, than virtually everybody. I guess the big question is whether they can continue to produce that week after week, which is a major issue in the A-League, is the consistency between games from week to week, where you do see this somewhat different standard of performance sometimes. The one side you don't see that difference from at the moment is Brisbane Roar.
Is Brisbane, yeah. Well, and it can be argued that it's due to their style, that it's the most easily replicated one from week to week because they're not so reliant on setting out their tactics against whichever team they're playing against. These are our tactics. Come and beat us, if you will.
Sounds vaguely familiar to a side.
It does,
that's dominating in Europe. At the moment.
I think the current European champions.
That's
I think.
I can't quite put my finger on the name of them again. But no, this is very much the style that Barca play in, where they say, you know, we will play our style of football.
Yeah.
You know,
and there's no confusion amongst the players. Everyone knows their role. And that's why, because from minute one until minute 90, everyone knows what they're doing. And that's why it clicks so well. There's no, this week we're playing away against a side who are physical, so we need to sit back and next week we're going to attack someone. It's just, we've figured out a system that works for us.
I think that's what, once Australian football gets that in its culture, you know, that teams decide how they wish to play the game, and they play it consistently, they will begin to play it consistently well. And when they do that, you'll start to see other sides play like Brisbane Roar do at the moment.
Yeah. And I mean, the other thing about those Partolu stats is, to make 100 passes, 100 plus passes at 97% completion rate, it doesn't matter what level of football you're playing at, that means that 97% of the time, you've hit your man with your pass. Doesn't matter if you're playing around the backyard. If I stood there and was sort of passing between my mates and 97% at the time, my pass left my foot and hit the other bloke in the foot, and he didn't have to stretch and didn't go in between blokes, I'd be feeling pretty good about myself. So to do it in the A-League is really something, like you said, something that needs to be taken note of.
It should be, and let's not forget that the A-League is our best league. You know, now somebody is showing that degree of excellence in our best league. You know, that's truly world-class performance. You know, maybe the standard would change a little bit if they were playing against different levels of competition, but at this stage, honestly, that guy couldn't do any more.
That's
right. He
played
a brilliant game.
Yeah, he played the perfect game for the level he's at.
Absolutely.
Was involved in the Socceroos A-League-based train-on squad that met during the week, I understand. So hopefully he had a chance to impress there. But, I mean, there's no surprises to why he's there given that performance. Brisbane roll on. Gold Coast, it should be said, played well in a 3-0 loss, I thought. I was very impressed. Marco Richters, the new Dutch centre forward they had, he looks the goods. I'm going to dash up on Sunday. As soon as I knock off work, I'm going to head straight up the motorway and watch Gold Coast United's game on Sunday night, because I want to see this bloke play. They're up against the Jets. I think it'll be a really good game. So we look forward to that. I don't think Gold Coast need to be disheartened, because they played well the first couple of weeks. So I think they need to take a leaf out of Brisbane's book and just say, hey, let's not panic. Let's just keep doing things our way.
Look, mate, it's too early in the season to worry about these sorts of things at the moment. And I think, as we'll get on to talk a little bit about the Melbourne sides later on, I think people have to be a little bit patient when you start off a new season. It's all right for sides like Brisbane, who have their game plan in place, have for a couple of seasons now. They can start from scratch. You know, a lot of these other sides are still trying to work out. You know, for instance, brand new player comes to the side, marquee player. All of a sudden, how's he going to fit in there? Now, you can run through any number of training drills in practice until you actually start playing games, see how that he fits into that system, or in fact doesn't fit into that sort of system, and what modifications you need to do. Give the sides a chance, you know. Support them, let them play attractive football. And as we've said when we've mentioned the Barca scenario before, whether Barca win a game 5-0 or lose a game 5-0, I will still watch Barcelona play, because that's the way they play. I want Australian sides to get that degree of confidence in the way they play as well, and not be so results-driven all the time. Results are a byproduct of good play. It doesn't work the other way. And I think that's one of the big problems with football in Australia, and one of the problems I see in the A-League is at the moment, all of a sudden we're three games in and people are saying, oh, well, Melbourne haven't, you know, they've got Harry Kewell sitting there, they haven't scored. You know, well, give them a chance. You know, Harry was never the greatest goal scorer that ever hit the planet, but he is by far and away the most gifted player we've ever produced. Let him have a chance to ply his trade.
On that note, we'll move to the second game of last weekend, Adelaide against Sydney, and it's sort of fits that mould a little bit, because Nicky Carle, of course, came back. He's almost like the Harry Kewell of the season before,
absolutely.
And came back under the same amount of pressure. People just expecting him to just click and work wonders just from the word go. He did score on the weekend, which was nice to see, so that will get people off his back. Sydney went to Adelaide, a tough place to go, especially after the way Adelaide played in beating Melbourne last week. I thought they were certs for the win here. Yeah. Sydney have nicked it 2-1. That should take pressure off, and hopefully, like you say, Sydney, as a result of getting that result, take the pressure off. Hopefully, we'll see them play a bit more naturally and free-flowing this week.
I think so. I think that when they first brought in their marquee players very early on in the process, when the A-League was in its infancy, one of the things we did like about Sydney FC was that style of openness that they did exhibit when they played. They were a great side to watch. I think now, once again, you've seen this pressure start to implode a little bit on sides, you know, and all of a sudden these incredible expectations is, well, hang on a minute, you've got more money than everybody else in the league. You should be winning all the time. And unfortunately, we've seen there's a better side up north at the moment who have worked things out. Now the pressure's on, and so someone like Nicky comes back in and everyone says, oh, well, we expect him to score every time he goes on there, you know. It's you know, that's not the way to get the best out of a team. It's not the best way to get it out of players as well. Again, let the side develop. Let the players believe that they are the most valuable element, you know, in this particular game, and they'll display that. There's no question about it, you know. Now, everybody has good games and bad games, and as you've seen, they probably didn't deserve to win that game, you know, but in the end of the day, they did win it. So if you are so results-driven, you will look at a particular stat and say, someone put one goal in, someone put two goals in. That's not the measure of the game.
That's,
you know,
right.
The game is measured differently. We observe things differently. We analyse it differently. So if you're just going to simply do it on the basis of, you know, how many goals scored, some of the worst games I've ever seen in my life is when someone wins 6-0. Mm. You know, that's not a game of football to me.
As a West Ham fan, we played against Portsmouth earlier this year, and it was a 4-3 snooze fest.
Yeah.
Like, honest to God, it was a snooze fest. It was an awful game to watch.
Yeah.
And
yet, if you look at it as a stat, you know, people will say, what a great game it must have been,
right.
You know.
We had
and then you said, no, they scored, we scored, they scored, we scored. And you go, hang on, just wake me up when the next person scores.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, most of them were defensive errors. There weren't great goals. Or, you know, there was a penalty in there as well. And the game never hit great heights. And I've seen nil-nils that were just enthralling. So, you know, we need to just remember that, you know, let the guys play. And the
There's
results
many,
will come
many
if they're
more elements
themselves.
To football than just scoring goals. And I know that's our final measure of success in this whole game, But that doesn't just occur, you know.
On that topic of discussion, it'll be interesting to see how Adelaide, hopefully, I say bounce back. I don't think they were too far off it. They were fantastic against Melbourne the week before last. Unfortunately, beaten by Sydney, they go up against Brisbane tonight.
Yeah.
So, look, it's got all the makings of a really good game.
And they shouldn't be worried about that at all. What they should draw on is if they can get that consistency from 2 weeks ago going in each of their games, they will win some games, they will lose some games, but they will play good quality football.
And when you're playing good quality football, you'll win more games than you lose anyway. As we sort of touched on there, Brisbane Roar, Adelaide United tonight at Suncorp Stadium. Should be a fantastic match. Let's go back down to Melbourne now. Recap briefly on the Melbourne Derby. It's been sort of analysed, but we'll touch on it because Melbourne Heart, do host Sydney FC this weekend.
Yeah.
So it links into our last game there. The victory still can't score. Christian and I talked on the show last week of is it being a case of too many cooks. What's your take on it, Steve?
Look, I think the expectation was that when all of a sudden they attracted someone like Harry Kewell to the side, there was this expectation that all of a sudden goals would flow. Now, whether those goals flow from him or from others, that hasn't been answered, of course, at this stage because they haven't been able to score. And that perhaps is more about the fact that they are yet to work out exactly what Harry's
the
role
best way
is.
To play him, yeah.
Because where do they play him? Do they play him up front? Do they play him wide? Do they play him dropping off? He has played all those particular roles with different sides. What they need to do is decide what is the best way to use Harry Kewell in this particular Melbourne side. And I don't think they really have got that answer yet. And now they're starting to display these elements of desperation. All of a sudden, when is it going to start to be, let's give the ball to Harry and hope he scores? I don't want to see football degenerate into that sort of level of operation. And I think that's not fair to Harry Kewell, and I don't think it's certainly fair to the other players.
Yeah, that's right.
Side.
It's not fair to his teammates.
It's not fair to the teammates.
Like you say, it's not the culture we want to build.
Yeah.
We don't want to single out the best player in every age group and say, okay, the game plan is give it to him.
Yeah, look,
if he gets injured, your entire team is buggy.
That's right. There's this notion of having to have a great player to hang things around. And we don't want to keep bashing on about Barca and those sort of things, but there have been plenty of times when Leo Messi has not scored. There have been plenty of other players on the side that have been there to score. And I think that's the advantage, is that a player like that gives so much confidence to the side when you know that you've got the best player in Australia playing with you.
The great Portuguese sides didn't depend on Eusebio. It was great that they had Eusebio and he helped everyone else around them play, but it wasn't all Eusebio. The great Hungarian sides, it wasn't all Puskás, but... No. You know, you don't win games by having one good player and 10 bad ones. You need to have everyone pitch
in. Honestly, the last time we ever saw that was when we saw Diego Maradona play for Argentina. And certainly that, I think, didn't do justice to the other players that he played with, because there were some extraordinarily good players that made Diego look pretty good. But having said that, Diego's style of play, you know, all of a sudden, I don't think, to my mind, is the most attractive way of playing football. I would much rather watch Barcelona play than to watch Diego Maradona carve through five or six players, because
pick
everybody worked
right
out
wing,
how to stop him.
Shoot.
They put a seventh player on him and they knew he would always take on one player too many.
Yeah.
You can't do that with great sides who play great teamwork football. And I think that's the thing I want to see develop in the A-League in Australia, is the notion that we are playing a team game. And we still don't quite get that in football culture in Australia. That there are a number of players on that side, that you play together, that no one player is going to win you a game. And once we get past that mentality of the one player, be it in this case we're talking about Harry Kewell, once he then slots into a side and starts to, or the other players start to see the value that he can add to the side, then the whole value of the side lifts. And all of a sudden, Melbourne Victory become a good side. Not just because Harry Kewell's in the side.
There was a great quote from Carl Valeri, who obviously plays that role for the Socceroos, where you don't get any glory. Your job is to go around, pick up scraps. And he said one of the best bits of sort of support he ever got was playing in Italy, when one of his teammates said, Carl, when you play, I don't know you're there. But when you're not playing, I notice when you're gone.
I notice when you're gone.
Yeah.
Look, that is absolutely... encapsulates it in a nutshell.
Yep.
You know, it's the element that you miss when it's not there.
That's right.
And that's
if
the most
everyone
important
does their
everybody
job.
Does their job. And it doesn't matter which side you talk about from whatever era. At the end of the day, there's always 11 players on that field on your side. And I have yet to see one player, albeit we've talked about Diego, be able to actually win a game on their own. Yep. It doesn't happen like that. And if you need any more affirmation of that, just watch Barcelona for a while and watch the way they play. You know, they keep the ball 70% of the time, but not one player keeps it 70% That's right. of the time. So there's your answer.
So, 0-0, the Hearts, rumours that they're trying to find, is trying to sign, I suppose you need to find him first as well, Jan Venegor of Hesselink, the big Dutchman formerly of Celtic, to stick up front. Not sure what to make of it. I think he's a tall lad, and I can sort of see the logic of wanting to knock balls up and knock balls down, especially when you got guys like David Williams. But for me, the Hearts got some really good attacking players. I don't think they need to do that. You got Alex Terrier, David Williams, and Fred to feed those guys. I tip Melbourne to have a really good year on that basis. I just don't think they can keep clean sheets. That's their problem.
Yeah, that's going to be a bit of a problem with them. But yeah, as I said, give them a chance. I hope they don't degenerate into this idea of target man football. We've been trying.
I find it just hard to think that they would, given that John Fanchier, he's coached the Dutch national team.
Yeah.
He'd be the last spoke in the league to say, all right, we're going to go for the stick.
That's right. Let's forget total football that we actually invented and then gave the rest of the world, and then it was somehow modified in the end and became what we now see as the Barcelona system. And no, we're going to go back to old English style football, you know, of the have the target man, one off that target man. Let's get the ball up to him as quick as we can. Yeah. Let's just actually, why don't we just forget the rest of the team?
That's right.
We'll kick it from the goalkeeper and let him get on the end of it and nod it in.
There was rumours last year that obviously Mustafa Amini, fantastic talent for the Central Coast Mariners, signed for Borussia Dortmund, has been loaned back. Christian and I were delighted at that news because the two clubs trying to sign him were Dortmund and Celtic apparently were interested in him. And we were thankful because as a central midfielder at Celtic, the only thing that gets a good workout during a game is your neck.
That's right.
I've seen a few games they've played this year.
Isn't that just sad that you sit there and you look like one of those clowns at the circus with your mouth open?
Yeah, that's right.
Backwards.
Well, with his big hair, he would look. Someone will walk up and put a ping pong ball down his throat and hope to win a prize. Nil-nil for victory in the Heart. As I said, Heart taking on Sydney this week. Melbourne victory, they travel across the ditch to face Wellington. We'll come to that a bit later on. Let's go to the F3 derby, Newcastle United Jets against the Central Coast Mariners. Christian and I both tipped the Mariners to come here. All signs pointed to an away win. They've been in good form. Of course, that meant that we both got it wrong.
That's absolutely right.
Newcastle,
it always happens.
Newcastle taking a 1-0 win. The game itself never reached any great heights, but again, one of the bonuses is that 14,000 people were there to watch it.
I think that's the big thing, you know, and that basically tells you what derby football is all about. You know, it's really about involvement. It's really about the intent between the two sides. Quite often, that doesn't lead to the best football. There's no question about it. But there are additional pressures in playing that style of
But it's great that we're getting that culture, you know, that tribal sort of. I know,
absolutely.
I know a few people who are part of it.
14,000 people. You know, give me a break. You know, we were whinging last year when sides were getting 2,000 and 3,000, and you know, even with the ridiculousness of $5,000, you know, 5,000 people limits on
the
stadiums.
Cap,
Now we have 14,000.
Yeah.
I find that very refreshing.
I did the live Twitter commentary through the football sack for Sydney against Brisbane a couple of weeks ago in round two, and it was, I think the crowd announced, it was about 16,000, 16.5, and I said, good turnout. And I copped a lot on Twitter from people saying, oh, no, get real. Sydney's 3 million people. It's 3 million people. It's not 3 million football fans.
That's exactly
it's a
right.
city
yeah.
that is one of the most multicultural places in the world. You've got people down there who are interested in the arts, not to mention other sports, people who are interested in business who've never thought of sport in their life. You know, the important thing is a few years ago, we didn't have a national league. And now we have people getting upset that we're claiming 16,000 is a reasonable crowd. Let's get real, guys. Let's be happy there's 16,000 people.
And I think also that leads to another interesting, and it's often debated point in football in Australia at the moment, is there are a lot of football fans in Sydney. There are not necessarily a lot of Sydney FC fans in Sydney. And this is a big issue now, that what they need to do as an A-League side is to engage the rest of the football community down there. And there's been lots and lots of discussion in different forums there at the moment as to how's the best way about going about doing a process like that. But once you do bring that on board, and then people take that ownership, and if you want to talk about success about football sides around the world and what makes them successful, we talked about Barcelona earlier on. You know what makes Barcelona successful? Not Messi, not Iniesta, not Xavi, not Fabregas, not any of the other players there. It's the 159,000 owners of the Barcelona Football Club who have it totally in their heart. And that club really does mean more to them than anything. Mm. Once we get a culture like that in Australia and people take great ownership, and you're starting to see a little bit of it with the Roar now, people are saying, they're our side. Mm. You know, we're very, very pleased. They're our side and they're playing great football. We're proud of them. Once Sydney embraces that and starts to embrace Sydney FC again, then all of a sudden, you will see that 16,000 become 20,000, mm. then 25,
it's
then
not,
30.
It's not about marquee players. Let's not sign Dwight York and expect the crowds to go up to 25,000 again.
No.
Start playing great football and the crowds will go up to 25,000.
Absolutely,
again.
Yeah. Play good football, people will come. Mm. You play ordinary football, sorry.
That's the way it's going to be. As we said, Newcastle getting the win there. They travel, as I said earlier, to Gold Coast this weekend. The Central Coast Mariners take on Perth Glory at Blue Tongue Stadium on Saturday. Speaking of Perth Glory and the aforementioned before them, Wellington Phoenix, they played in Perth, what I coined the default derby, just because they didn't have anyone
didn't
within
have
Kiwi.
Have a derby against, yes.
I would love it if that just became a rivalry for that reason. Like Brighton and Crystal Palace in England.
Yeah.
No one knows why,
yeah.
But that's a hugely fierce rivalry.
Let's just do it on geography. You know? Let's see the two most furthest aside parts.
I would love it if both those teams just highlighted that fixture every year. Hey, we're going to beat those Wellington guys, and the Knicks highlight the Perth game.
Actually, I reckon what we should do is we should get a side over in the Cook Islands. So everybody has to have at least one away trip to the Cook Islands.
Yeah.
There you go.
There you go. Problem solved.
Yeah, problem solved. Geography's done it.
Yeah, that's right. But then we have a massive area and everyone has trouble.
Yeah.
Shane Smeltz with the winner. Again, we've waxed lyrical on this show before about how good he is. Liam Miller is really impressing me at the moment as well. He's really brought a lot of quality to that side.
And it's the way they play the game that I find very, very refreshing. You know, and the thing is, we talked about consistency early on. Consistently, week in, week out, these players are starting to produce those level of performances. And that's what sets up a great standard in a league. People want to be able to go to each game each week and say, this is my expectation. Yeah. They don't want to be surprised and say, geez, wasn't that a great game?
Yeah.
Well, what else were you expecting when you went
that's
along?
Right.
That's what. Whenever I go see a game of football, I want to see a great game of football. And I want to be able to do that week in, week out. And once we get that degree of consistency in the A-League and people support their own club to that level, and they can be assured that when they turn up next week, their side's going to turn up and play. You know, this is not the French rugby side we're talking
you're gonna
about
get,
here.
You're going to get dud games, but let's make the dud game the odd one out as
Absolutely.
Opposed to the good
Let's
one
make it
the
exception,
one
not the norm. And let's not be surprised by a good game of football.
Yeah.
Let's expect a good game of football every time we go to a game.
Yeah. Last week on the show, for those of you who listen, well, you know, but for those of you who don't, Christian really went on a bit of a rampage to defend Perth coach Ian Ferguson. He actually said to me afterwards, I didn't realise how much of a rampage I went on. And he made a lot of good points. He inherited a very poor squad. He had to dig out some results early. He had a really good year with North Queensland Fury with a poor squad up there. And the proof's in the pudding. They're good to watch now, Perth.
Absolutely.
Let's give Fergie a bit of time over there.
We keep coming back to this point over and over again.
Yes.
We have this degree of impatience to get our football to develop because perhaps for so long we took an inordinate amount of time to try and work out how to play this game. We still haven't quite got it right just yet. But now there's almost this expectation that from each week you're expecting to see development and things go on and get better. And it takes time to instill that sort
That's
of...
That's what I said about the crowds. Let's go season by season, not week by week.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, let's, So what happens next week if we get 15,930 people are going to go,
Yeah, that's right. It's down. Let's cancel the whole thing.
Yeah, let's go. That's
let's
it. It's finished.
Turn
now.
The lights off. Don't even play the game.
Yeah, it's over. You know, we've not cracked the 16,000.
Yeah. Looking forward to that. Of course, Wellington Phoenix, Melbourne Victory, Perth Glory, as I said, against the Mariners. So should be another good round of A-League football. If you would like to go and see some, but are a bit cheap and wouldn't like to fork out the ticket prices, well, then you're in luck because by going to the Football Sack website, www.thefootballsack.com, you can just click on the banner at the top. There is a ticket giveaway. The Central Coast Mariners are giving away a family pass. So that's a family of four. I think it's to their five top matches this season, so you can enter that. It's really easy to be a part of. Melbourne Heart are doing the same. They're giving away double passes to, I think it's 10 matches. It's something really great like that. And Perth Glory, they've given us a double pass to every game. So even if you are, we've said this before, if you are a club member and you have your seat reserved anyway, still enter the competition, win it, and give it to two mates who've never been. Drag them along, convert them, let's get more fans on board. And as I said, to take part in that, all you have to do is go to www.thefootballsite.com, click on the banner that is at the top. It's flashing, it's got Glory ticket giveaway, and then it'll flash and it'll change, and it'll say Heart ticket giveaway, and then it'll flash and it'll change, and it'll say Mariners ticket giveaway. And if you can't find it after all those instructions, then you don't belong behind a computer. Let's now move on and let's talk about the APFI that I discussed last week, the Asia Pacific Football Institute. It's being constructed here at Southern Cross University.
Yes.
Steve, you are the position of general manager. How have you come into that role?
Okay, this has been an interesting evolution. This, basically, for those of you who don't know, the APFI stands for Asia Pacific Football Institute. And I think even in the title, you get a fair indication of the importance and difference that's going to take place with this particular instrumentality as far as the development of football is concerned. You notice we've stayed away from terms like academy and things like that. The whole idea of this process is to be as inclusive as possible and have as little exclusion as possible. And unfortunately, academy systems are all about selecting the best in a particular area and developing them to a certain point, and hopefully they will then be utilised in some mechanism. One of the things that really, I think, is at the heart of the APFI is that we took a really serious look over many, many years. And for some of this, that has been a long period of time. I've been around football for 40 years. So I can tell you I've seen a lot, and I've been very frustrated for a very long period of time with the development of Australian football, because there just weren't certain things in place that I thought needed to be in place. And I've had these discussions with many other people in the footballing fraternity, and Craig Foster, who's a very good friend of mine, who we have a very long association going back, has very much, in his often outspoken way, but very, very heartfelt way, wanted to see things happen with Australian football. And we said we just needed things in place that weren't in place at the moment, and we needed a mechanism to do this. And we really needed to move it on from a dream, you know? I mean, everybody sits around and bangs on in articles all the time, we need to do this, we need to do that, the A-League's this, the FFA are this. And we turned around and said, look, we need to be more fundamental with what we're doing in this particular
area.
Let's stop talking about it and let's actually do something about it.
And that's what you told me about the attitude to this thing. This is an unreal complex. And you've told me the attitude from day one is, okay, let's start and let's just push it until someone tells us to stop. And no one's told you to stop yet.
Actually, yeah, it's been quite the opposite. I think there was a degree of disbelief, first of all, when we started off, and that even is from the hometown of Lismore. You know?
It was from me until we sat down and you showed me the blueprints for this building, then took me down and showed me the site.
It's perfectly understandable for people to feel like that, because you always hear about someone coming up with the answer to Australian football. And can I say that we don't have that opinion at all? What we do know is that there are certain elements we feel are really missing from Australian football to turn it into an elite and acceptable level of football around the world. We're always going to have the enthusiasm. We keep forgetting over and over again, this is the highest participation sport from youth in Australia. Everybody wants to play football. Somewhere down the track, that message gets lost. And unfortunately, when they do get onto a certain age group a little bit later on, they often move away from football and move into other sports. We've been really trying to work our way through in our own minds what's causing that particular problem or that particular issue. And we've decided that probably it is to do with the way that we start the game, the development. You know, now some people call it grassroots, or if you like, to me, it's the starting point of the game and how we go about the
process. How people view it.
That's right.
What sport they think they're playing.
Yeah, what sport do you think you're playing? And you'll often, and one of the first questions I often ask, you know, a young person when they want to play football, I say, well, why do you play football? And, you know, the sad thing for me is they often just look back at me and stare. And I think
a lot of the time it's parents say it's a minimal sort of contact sport, and that's why they get pushed in. We'd love to get it to the stage where they choose football because it's the fun one.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the elements. And this is the same with any educational process. And we do have to treat this as a developmental process. We don't all of a sudden do something different in football that we do when we're schooling people in that particular environment. This is what we are trying to do, is come up with an environment where we can, if you like, school people in the idea of football. Now, that can be done on very, very many different levels. One of the levels we want to really work at is the basic technical skill levels in Australia. They are very poor. I don't think
anyone who watched the Joeys and the Under-20s World Cup will testify to that.
Would despair, and I despair when I watch that too, because I see fantastically talented young players.
Natural athletes,
unbelievable, who don't know how to play the game, you know. And they must feel an enormous amount of frustration themselves when they play a game. For instance, when the Joeys played Spain, all of a sudden, the first half of the game, they're down 5-0 at half time. And they sit back in their own mind and they say, what's different? They play 4-3-3 or 4-3-2-1. We play 4-3-3 or 4-3-2-1. What's different? Why is it? We should be able to play like this, and we're not playing like this, And these guys have just taken the foot off the pedal for us, and they're just being nice to us now. And you could see the despair on the face of those Joeys at the end of the game. And I thought, why do we keep repeating this over and over and over again? Our great young talent always comes up short. And so we worked very, very hard when we were putting together the idea of the APFIs. How are we going to do this, Okay, first of all, we need great facilities to do this on, because nobody learns to play great football playing on cow paddocks.
On a mud patch,
And some of the fields that everybody's growing up and playing on, it's amazing they can play the level of football that they actually can, because some of them you just despair when you actually look at them, Now, a lot of that's resource-based, a lot of it's because it's council-based lands and those sorts of things.
Well, tell us about these facilities.
Okay, we thought we'd take that out of the equation, if you like, and we turned around and said, okay, let's have a look at the game around the world and how it develops. For a start, everybody starts off developing, say around 6, 7, 8 years of age. Usually that's when people start to get involved in this particular game. And the way we decided to look at the development of this particular facility was, okay, let's put an infrastructure in place, if you like, that will allow us to forget the weather, forget all these other concerns. Let's put a state-of-the-art facility together that will allow us, from just the physical side of the facility, to put together potentially a great football system or a great football development system. So basically the facility, as it will appear to everybody in the future, is going to have a competition grass pitch, and again, that's an interesting element that always goes into every area of football development, but as far as usage is concerned, it's probably the least used area of anything. The most important areas to us will be the ones that appear there very, very soon, probably within the next 6 months or so. These are going to be two artificial pitches. Now, most of you will be aware of this, listening to this particular program, that FIFA have a rating system for their pitches. If you want to play any high standard on an artificial pitch, it has to be a FIFA 2-star rated pitch. There's a lot that goes into producing a pitch like that, not the least a lot of money that needs to go into doing those. Each of those pitches, once I put lights around them down there, will set us back around about $1 million. There is no way around it. If you want that level of pitch and you want it to get recertified at the level of FIFA 2-star rating, it needs to be done every 12 months. And so it must meet some really stringent test requirements. And to do that, I'm afraid that just goes with a dollar price tag on it. What it affords you is the ability to play football when you want to play football and not be limited by condition.
Well, with these lights in place, this literally is the quality of pitch that they're going to be playing on is equivalent to a Champions League standard pitch.
Absolutely.
And it's literally every single minute of the day, turn on the lights, play all night, all around the year, kids can go on there and play on the best facilities. And it's not just one of these pitches that's going in either. That's the amazing thing.
Now, there's going to be at least two of those pitches there and quite possibly three of those pitches in the future. Now, I'm not sure that all listeners are aware that most of the junior football, even up to World Cup standards, up until you see the Joeys playing,
He's played on artificial
turf, you know. And you saw, unfortunately, with the last episode in Mexico, when you did see the World Cup over there, unfortunately, the standard of football often depended on the standard of pitch that the players were playing on. Some of those fields were absolutely atrocious. Yeah. And the, even to play the level that some of them, the teams played on, there was an outstanding testament to their ability. And a very,
some,
very
some were like playing on carpet, and others right, were like yeah, playing on very, trampoline,
very poor indictment
they, yeah.
of the lack of consistency in the yeah. pitches themselves. So what we want from this particular facility is those people to have the very best standard, not just anywhere, you know, in Australia. This is the very best in the Southern Hemisphere, the very best in the world. They do not come in any higher rating than this. So you are basically saying that these guys will be able to play on the best pitches in the world. And really interestingly, I guess it's to do with the cost factor and those sorts of things, is there's not a lot of this sort of facility available in Australia. There is only one FIFA two-star artificial pitch in Sydney, and that's owned by a private school. The only other ones I know of is actually down in Melbourne at Kingston Heath, where they actually have two FIFA two-star rated pitches down there. As far as other pitches are concerned, there's lots of artificial pitches around, but unfortunately they just don't meet that high competitive level and standard. So there'll be certainly that's going to be one of the feature elements of this particular facility down there. There's also going to be in the development when it's finally in its final incarnation, going to be a lot of technology available to people who want to develop the other areas of football. So, for instance, coaches who wish to become great coaches will have an outlet or an ability to learn to become very, very good coaches. And the secret is quite, I think, in football is going to be when that APFI facility gets up and going, it's how many people we can go and put through that system who then can go out to the rest of football in Australia and reproduce and spread it. Certainly, we'll have a great facility there. We are hoping that we can, in fact, expand that facility at some point in the future. That will get down to a dollar's decision. But if this turns out to be the success we all hope it to be, we think that that won't be such a difficult sell to get people to want to take on board and embrace and bring this idea of having football available to them. Now, the reason that we've worked very, very hard and are still working very, very hard with Barcelona is to try and get what I think is the best junior development system in the world, which is their Escola system.
Now, I think there is a little bit of evidence in that, given that eight of the current Barcelona first team squad are graduates.
Actually, 11 of them.
11
yeah,
are.
Yeah, 11 of them are. If you actually look at the last World Cup winning Spanish side, of the Finnish side that played that game, there were around about 8 of those players came from Barcelona. 7 of those players came through the Escola system. Now, that includes players like Leo Messi and Xavi Hernandez.
Cesc Fabregas.
Yeah, Cesc Fabregas. Puyol. Yeah, we just go on and on, Valdez, on and on. Yeah. There we go. You know, there they are again with those names springing up over and over again. And I think that's... I think people sometimes get a little bit sick about hearing about Barcelona. Oh, Barcelona this, Barcelona that. The reason I'm so enthusiastic about Barcelona is that not so much that they're winning everything at the moment. That's great, and that's fantastic, and that's usually based on the style of football that they
play.
That's
what you say, it's a byproduct of doing it the right way.
It is, and actually the Barca philosophy is all about that. They turn out good people first, and they say you can't turn out good people you won't have great footballers unless you have great people. Yeah. So the principles and the ethics and the beliefs that they have that underpin the Barcelona system are all about honesty, integrity, respect, honour, those sorts of things, temperance, all these sorts of elements that we think make good people, make good footballers.
Mm. And make the football something that you love to do, not something that you are employed to do.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's not about a paycheck.
And like you said, Messi, he never wants to leave the field. No, he's not looking to get substituted to
it's
save
really
himself
interesting.
For
when
midweek.
When the Southern Cross delegation went over there, they asked a few of the guys over
there. We should just point out that the Southern Cross, we've already sent guys over
to
meet these
guys. And they've met with all the senior officials of the club up to and including Bartomeu, who is the vice president, of course. And one of the interesting things was they asked that question straight out. I said, it must be difficult dealing with a guy like Leo Messi. I mean, you know, superstar beyond belief. Blah, 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 buyout contract, 250 million euros. You hear these figures thrown around all over the place. And they said, what's the biggest problem you have with Leo Messi? And they said, our biggest problem is we cannot get him to go and take some time off. He wants to play every minute of every game. It doesn't matter whether they're playing in La Liga, whether they're playing in Super Cup, whether they're playing in European Cup. He just wants to play. And I thought, that's really, really interesting to me that when there we're talking about the player in the world at the moment. And for those of you who really haven't had a close chance to sit and watch him play, I've seen a lot of players over the years and I've admired a lot of players. I have never seen a better player. Mm. He is, to my mind, complete, and he is made complete by the rest of the Barcelona team. And hence why there's always this argument out there at the moment about, you know, why he doesn't play as well for Argentina as he does for Barcelona. That's Argentina's problem.
If they can figure that out, they'll cash in on it.
Absolutely. But until then. And they will cash in on it. And the reason is that these players in that current Barca squad have learnt to play with each other. You know, they've learnt to develop from a very, very young age. They all lived in the La Masia, the living complex where the guys actually live and learn and train.
And that will be an element of this
we are,
complex
we are hoping
as well,
that
won't
we can
it?
Do that. We certainly will have elements of that in the very near future. We first of all will get the physical facility inside. We do have some incredible resources here to allow for that live-in facility at Southern Cross University, and that was one of the great advantages and the very attractive advantage that Barcelona saw in being aligned with the university. They've never done this with a university anywhere else in the world, and they thought, this is a great opportunity because you guys are talking about extending the Barca brand beyond just our great football that we play.
Into an academic and a professional sense.
Absolutely,
as well,
you know, and this gets back to that question you asked earlier about what's the APFI really going to do for football? Well, we're certainly going to look at something if we win that Escola system of being able to teach the kids the right way to play the game. We'll be able to teach the coaches the right way to coach people in that particular environment. But then we can actually look at the other elements that are limiting our sport in Australia. And a lot of that is a structural problem within the way the game is run and administered. And one of the big problems is that there are quite often not highly qualified footballing people
telling
running
people how to do football.
Basically, you know, they have an interest in the area, but they don't have a love of the game. And I think everybody involved in Australian football needs to have a love of football. Once that is expanded across all elements of the game, whether they be from coaching the kids at the bottom level, through to the administrators, through to the love of the clubs, from all of their community support, that's when you'll see football go forging ahead. So the whole idea of the APFI is to open up opportunity, if we possibly can, to develop football.
Yeah, plant the seed. And like we said with the A-League, basically, we don't expect the results. This complex, by being built, is not going to change the way that football is run overnight. However, by planting the seed and getting the kids who start here enjoying their football and the way the coach being coached the right way and that spreads out, then it can definitely be the seed that gets planted.
Absolutely. Even if you just ran through a normal evolution of the process, say you started a six-year-old now, by the time they get to around about 10, between the ages of 10 and 12 is called the golden years in football. That's when we tend to be able to work out whether those players really have the potential to be something special. Those that do then go into academy systems and those sorts of things and youth development programs. And remember, in other parts of the world, that's a fairly, you know, people say, well, geez, that's a long time, isn't it? You know, you're starting at six and you're saying, hang on a minute, you know, when are these players prepared? A lot of those players don't actually start playing 11-a-side football until they're 14 years of age. Most of them start off with 5-a-side.
Never seen a full-size pitch.
Never seen a full-size pitch. But interestingly, the way they play it, particularly in Spain, for instance, with the Escolas, is they don't play on full-size pitches, but actually the goals are somewhat in between a full-size goal.
Yes, it's not a full-size goal on a small pitch.
And what do they call
it?
The little kiddie football they play with the tiny little goals.
Yeah, small-sided games.
Yeah,
sort of stuff,
what they're encouraging them to do is to develop a style of football that puts that ball in the back of the net. You know,
work with what you've got there.
Work with what you've got.
If the goal is small, then you need to work on your accuracy.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, and they play the game.
If you have a smaller pitch, be quicker with your passing.
Absolutely,
to open up
you know, and it's the quickness of that passing that is, I guess, the key to developing that style of football. And it was really, really interesting when I looked at people starting to say, well, how do you describe this Barca style of doing? And one uninformed lady was doing an interview with me, and she's a really nice person. And she called it ticky-tack football.
Ticky-tack.
I thought, and it's just stuck in my mind somewhere along the line, ticky-tack football, because I thought, hang on a minute, here's a person who knows nothing about football, And how does she identify with it? Yeah. And it was the rapid movement of the ball backwards and forwards. To her, she called it ticky-tack football.
Instead of seeing someone pick it up and run for 20 metres and lay it off to someone else who runs for 20 metres.
But to her, she was enthralled by it because it was like a little game of moving Space the Invaders around. Or like moving chess, the places like chess and then it's playing what
trying
she called...
Trying to unlock the combination,
what she called ticky-tack football. So, look, I guess the thing is, if you look at that incarnation, run them from 6, say, through to 15, then get them into youth development areas... Well, you are starting to talk about 15 years worth of development, okay? So you're probably saying that, we will see certainly players out of this system in not the next World Cup, not the following World Cup, but probably starting to come through as being potentials for
2022,
Qatar. Which would have been so nice for us to actually win that.
That's right, it could have been our golden generation winning on home soil.
Quite honestly, it could have been our golden generation. I think that we've missed out
on
an enormous opportunity.
Well, let's show FIFA. By winning the World Cup that should have been ours.
That's the best way of doing it. Yeah, let your football do the speaking.
Yeah. Steve, thank you very, very much for coming in and joining us today. It's been a pleasure to have you in. Obviously, due to time constraints, we could sit here and talk all day. But we have to let these people get back to their day jobs because your lunch hour is probably over, which means that you'll have to turn your iPod off, which means that it is the end of the Friday show. It's been the Football Sack with me, Steve Hapgood. Thanks for coming in, Steve.
Oh, thanks very much for having me, Jack.
My name is Jack Quigley. Tune in on Sunday for the boys for the Sunday show and enjoy the weekend's football. Until then, see you around.